Welcome back to the place where we talk cannabis news. What is up, y'all? Drop a one in the chat if you're excited to talk about cannabis stocks today. Or more importantly, drop how much you love Javier Hasse into the chat. I will, for sure.
No comments there.
No. I want to hear all the compliments for Javier. And then thirdly, cannabis stocks. If you have a cannabis stock that you want to hear about throughout the show here, we are 28 minutes to go. We have two amazing interviews for you, so we're not going to do a ton of news.
Yeah.
So if you want it directed at something, let us know. I'm excited about the interviews today. We have an absolute brand grandmaster and marketing master in Madison Fiore from Matteo Fiore.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be an exciting conversation. And then we're also talking to Abner Curtin, CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, about their recent
report.
Yeah, this is going to be a killer show.
Drop your stocks for the, I think for the very first time in many, many shows where people always ask for SNDL. We have news out of SNDL today. But before that, you might wonder, why am I not wearing my classical sweater, button-up shirt? I just finished an amazing interview with a Venezuelan rapper, the most popular rapper in all of Venezuela. He's called Acapella. So I'm rocking my Rick and Morty today.
Love Rick and Morty. the fact that was like what you planned though to wear to that makes me so happy. Awesome.
Hoodie and Timberland boots. You gotta look the part for hip hop.
Fair enough. Y'all, we're getting some exciting additions to our cannabis conference, September 13th and 14th. Cannabis Awards. Benzinga's first ever Cannabis Awards announced September 12th that evening. Find out who the judges in Benzinga's ecosystem think is truly winning the cannabis industry. However, more importantly, let's chat about today, Javier. What is happening today? I got to tell you, when I'm doing Cannabis Daily every morning, this morning was a flurry of reporting from yesterday and today. Anything sticking out to you?
I mean, SNDL or formerly Sundial Earnings, pretty cool. SNDL, they released their financial results for the second quarter. Net revenue of $173.3 million US, $223.7 million Canadian.
Up from
$9 million in the second quarter of 2021. We always talk about Sundials or SNDLs, you know, big comeback, how they seized opportunity after becoming a meme stock on Reddit and suddenly, you know, going like, okay, we have a big influx of capital. What do? We put it to work and they did it and they drove revenue and they drove sales and they improved margins. You know, like gross margins improved to 43.1 million Canadian, up 1600%.
Yeah, so Javi, I'm on your side here. I think these numbers are insanity. However, I just to play devil's advocate for those that are, you know, like to see the negative glass half empty type peeps, it's okay, you know, and it's fine. No, they're not the devil. How do you stop that? So Pablo Zwanich, analyst at Cantor Fitzgerald, called Sundial's business overly complex, if I remember the correct term from his note. Basically, the four different branches of the business aren't necessarily synergistic. I would say alcohol and cannabis, I very much disagree with him on that. But what do you think is really spurning that outside of he's very, when the market is deteriorating, he always remains neutral, lowers 12-month price target. You know, what thoughts on that, man?
It's a debate, right? We were chatting with Tilray CEO recently, right? Erwin Simon, also on Cannabis Insider. You can check out the show. Just go to YouTube and type in Cannabis Insider Tilray. You'll find it. But it's a similar model, right? A lot of people will hate on it. A lot of people say mixing all these different businesses makes no sense. But at the same time, every investor is asking Canadian licensed producers, LPs, to bring in new revenue, to create new businesses, to expand beyond the Canadian cannabis market. Everyone goes, okay, like the Canadian market is not big enough, right? And then these companies think creatively out of the box, branch out, and people are like, oh, well, it's not weed. And it's like, I get it. I understand the mix is weird. But at the same time, you got to keep a business afloat, right? You got to be profitable if you're publicly traded to continue to provide medicine to those who need it.
Yeah, I love Sundial, honestly. I think what they've done over the last year and a half or maybe longer, has been pretty impressive. So with that, you know, we can talk about Sundial all day. That's fine. But we have a few more minutes to go through some news items. Mm-hmm. I have a few things. One that I, you know, talked about a little bit in Cannabis Daily Newsletter today. If you're not subscribed, you should subscribe to Cannabis Daily Newsletter. You also get a discount code to our event in Chicago upon subscribing to that. So you should use
it. Money.
But the majority of Texans support recreational marijuana legalization. Of course, that's on top of medical. However, you know, it still seems the vast majority of Republicans in that state do not. 55% overall, but that's including Democrats, independents, and Republicans. So that for me was something that I wanted to point out. But obviously, honestly, I don't think we're getting to recreational in Texas anytime soon.
You might be surprised. Honestly, there's a few progressive liberal pockets in Texas and a lot of people who are simply pro-cannabis or pro-freedom. A lot of people, I was in Texas for South by Southwest this year, right? And I, of course, Austin is not representative of all of Texas, but I met a lot of people from different parts of Texas and there seemed to be consensus, right? Like, you know, we are the state of freedom. We're a state of, where we appreciate all these liberties. And so why not support cannabis? People in Texas are very familiar with issues related to trafficking, people going to jail, a lot of cross-border commerce, if you will, illicit, of course. And they're tired. They're tired of seeing their tax dollars go to these private prisons housing thousands and thousands of cannabis prisoners, right?
Yeah, that's fair, man. I mean, all good points. With that, Javi, my suggestion is we move into our two incredible guests that we have today. Are we good to start with Madison, Aaron? Let's go, Madison. I think he was on. So let's do Madison Fiore from Matteo Fiore. Is it Fiore? Fiore? We're going to find out. I don't know. Either way, I'm excited to talk to the
power guy. In Italian.
Awesome. Aaron, let's bring the gentleman right over. There he is. What's up, man?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Chilling, hanging out with cool people. That's what we do here.
I love it, man. I love it. That's life now, right?
Absolutely. Well, welcome in, man. If I'm not mistaken, this is your first time with us on Insider. Maybe second? I think first.
First time on Insider.
So
Insider, rocking a hip-hop friendly attire as well. Look at that flannel shirt.
It's fine. I'll be the uptight guy here. That's fine. I'll play that card. So, Madison, you have a massive expertise in marketing, but tell us about you, man. How'd you get into cannabis?
Yeah, I mean, I was at a pretty incredible marketing agency called Hawk Media. I joined there when it was a really small agency and helped grow it into a much larger agency. I think by the time we left, we had over 300 employees. And, in that time, you kind of get an opportunity to kind of pick a lane, if you will. And I kind of just chose the cannabis lane for a handful of reasons. One, I think it's going to have a massive impact on our society, both like recreationally and medicinally and culturally. I think there's an opportunity for cannabis to make a big impact and replace some of these other vices that people use, whether it's painkillers or alcohol or sleeping medication or everything in between. And so I chose that lane and I kind of grew with the agency, worked with a lot of big brands from Ease to Heavy Hitters, MedMen, Jetty Extracts, Wild, so many, many more. And I just felt like it was time to build a team that was hyper specialized in cannabis. This space is remarkably fragmented. It's really difficult to market and advertise. And so to really compete, I think you have to understand the space. Whereas many other agencies treat it like just another brand, this space is just too damn fragmented to treat it like another brand. You really have to understand it. So I went to the Benzinga conference, believe it or not, in New York. I spoke on this on a panel with a handful of marketing people, walked off the stage, ran into Rosie, Matteo Communications, who I had known for a long time. We started talking and decided to launch this joint venture less than a month later. So here we are.
What are you doing? You were talking about picking your lane. I picked my lane, by the way. It's called Elliott Lane. Woo pack
hey,
right now.
Yeah.
Nice.
How do you How do you why do you choose to partner with Rosie Matteo and with Matteo Communications? Of course, it's a powerhouse in cannabis, but like, how do you accomplish it and what are you doing now? Like, how is Matteo and Fiore different from Matteo Communications?
Yeah, 100%. So I think, you know, Rosie herself is just a powerhouse. If anybody's had a chance to interact with her or work with her, you immediately realize how powerful and how well connected she is in the space. I think without Matteo Fiore, Matteo Communications is already probably the best cannabis marketing agency in the world. And so when they had that box and that clientele and that level of professionalism that is very overlooked in this space, I think professionalism is something that I really look for in a partner. So those kind of few boxes are what led us to this avenue. But also she was looking to build and advertising, performance marketing, kind of email side to her already thriving PR agency. And I was looking to build advertising, performance marketing, and email shop specifically focused in cannabis. So it was just a natural fit. The channels that we focus on, like first and foremost, is performance marketing strategy, understanding like your tech stack, your competitive and out, your competitive market fit, understanding ways that people finding out about the brand, how they're converting. So auditing and analyzing all those channels, then initially typically going into like some funnel optimizations around content, photo, video, email, blog content, kind of web optimizations. But then kind of the piece de resistance is really the advertising. Obviously, like just about every other ad agency and e-commerce agency out there, what they do doesn't necessarily translate to the cannabis space. There's a lot of traditional channels. There's a lot of kind of gray hat Facebook and Google channels. There's obviously programmatic display, there's influencer, there's affiliate, but all of those really need to be built out in a custom way for the cannabis and CBD industry. And so that's what we've done. And I kind of took a lot of the experience and a lot of the findings from my time of the last 5 years, optimized that and made it a lot easier for cannabis and CBD brands to use.
I have a couple questions. I'd love to start with something more topical though. The FCC item that was in the news for a couple weeks there, I think end of July, basically saying they're not going to prohibit broadcasters to, you know, that they're not going to punish them, or the FCC can't punish them now for advertising for cannabis companies in regulated markets or legal markets. So is that now, you know, if that goes through, when that goes through, does that become a bigger part of this, or is that just kind of not as big of a news story as we think? I'd love your perspective on that.
Yeah, I wish it was as big of a news story as we hoped, but as an advertiser and as a publisher, you have a responsibility to make sure that you're advertising to a demographic that is 21 and above. So while the FCC takes away like the inability to, the advertisers and the publishers still have a lot of responsibility to make sure that they're advertising to the right demographic. So as we, you know, immediately saw that and started reaching out to some of our partners, nothing changed. So it may over time, I think as a lot of legislation continues to move, which is why, you know, I'm here now where I think there's an opportunity. I think advertising is going to get a lot easier over the next 3 to 5 years and decade plus. But right now, it really takes a team of, you know, responsible marketers to run a campaign effectively.
Perfect. And then my second conversation or second question here seems like education was a big part of drawing people in the early parts of cannabis. Is that still part of a marketing strategy in terms of providing education, searchable education for websites? Is that something that you guide your clients on, or is that also something that is just is?
Well, I think education gave a lot of these brands an opportunity to dominate market share in the early days, right? Like you'll see some of like the biggest brands, both in the CBD and cannabis space, were very, very, very educational, and they did a great job of educating kind of newcomers. Now they've got great market share, and so they continue to win off that education. I think when you're developing a brand, you're very quickly able to tell, or if you're going to go kind of more of the educational content or more of the entertaining content route, where you're interacting and trying to build like a lifestyle of fun. I think like a, you know, Cookies does an amazing job of this. If you follow them anywhere, they've got events and all sorts of interactive stuff going on, but it's not always, or it's very rarely educational. So yes, I think educational is absolutely a strategy, being like research focused, being science focused, making sure that you're products are formulated effectively and you're communicating those formulations effectively. But I think the brand aspect is starting to become more and more prevalent, which is where you're interacting with your community in more of like an entertainment style manner, where you're providing value, whether it's events or shows or brand partnerships or even merchandise. So I think the entertainment avenue is going to become a lot more prevalent, whereas education absolutely dominated the last 3 or 4 years.
You know, as many know, there's many, many constraints when it comes to marketing cannabis. You touched on several of them. There's most platforms used for traditional marketing, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or even Google, are often not available, right? And then you go to mainstream media outlets and you want to advertise, but you say we have to make sure that we are, crafting messaging directed at people 21 and over, right? And that adds an extra layer of complexity. How do you manage that? Like, how do you ensure that it's people over 21 that are receiving this information?
Well, first, a lot of it actually lies on the publishers. When you're submitting like an RFP or doing a direct buy with any sort of like publisher, programmatic tool, direct buy, billboards, all these types of things, they're pretty responsible for making sure that their audience is 21 up. Like when you go to buy a billboard, the advertiser pretty quickly knows if it's within a school or if it's within a church or these types of things, because they'll have the billboards kind of pre-approved for these types of buys. So the publishers and the platforms that you're buying the media on are highly responsible for it. There's also, when it comes to media planning, it always comes down to goals, right? Like we have clients right now that are MSOs and they're buying media on pedicabs and they're buying billboards and they're buying digital trucks and they're doing direct mail. And then on the very opposite end, we have brands that are spending, cannabis brands that we're spending Facebook advertising dollars on, we're spending Google advertising dollars on, and there are ways to do it. I'll say compliantly with an asterisk on it, where you're not actually selling the product, but you're advertising the brand and some sort of
interesting
alternate product. So there are ways to do it. We're spending, tens of thousands of dollars, probably close to $100,000 a month right now on Facebook, and our clients are all cannabis or CBD. So there absolutely are ways to do it. It's just about being really, really persistent. I think the biggest difference between us and, most other agencies is, if they get shut down on Facebook, they say it didn't work. Whereas us, we know that we're expecting to get shut down on Facebook. So we've got a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh solution kind of lined up for when they do get shut down. And we're constantly optimizing and we're prepared for that moment because we're doing it on an ongoing basis.
Awesome, man. That is super insightful. So let's continue this. You are going to be at our Chicago event in September 13th and 14th, hopefully leading a discussion around brands. And with that, my friend, I'm so looking forward to getting more of your insights. We'll get you back on here soon. Honestly, there's no better guest than you when it comes to these updates happening topically. So appreciate you joining us, Madison.
Absolutely. And I saw you at the beginning, by the way. It's Fiori, just like you said.
Fiori. Fiori.
Yes. Oh, Fiori, not Fiore.
No, not Fiore. I mean, depending on how Italian you are, but if you're the average folk, you can say Fiori.
Yeah,
but
Fiori.
Rosie and I actually, because her name's Rosie, which means rose, and my name's Fiori, which means flower. So we felt like there was a good connection there. With the new website, we've got some ties to roses and flowers on it.
Yes, I love it, man. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks again, Madison. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thank you guys. See ya.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, Javi, we are doing a quick transition here, my friend. Yes, we are going to bring on for a nice recap of what happened over the second quarter of 2022, CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, Abner Curtin. There he is, Mr. Curtin. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, good, good. Welcome in. Welcome back, I should say. Let's start, man. Let's dive right in. You killed it, honestly. You're looking really good. Give us your feedback if you can.
Well, you know what they say, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. I mean, this was kind of a rough quarter for a lot of people. And, we're kind of excited to, do what we're trying to do here. New Jersey was tremendous for us and other people. I think that You know, this industry, you know, we talk a big game about the flip to adult use and how we're all going to do great. And I think this was a quarter where we were able to prove that. I mean, I think our Rochelle Park store did 1,800 transactions last June. And this year it did 23 times as much, 17 times as much revenue.
That's, you know, incredible.
We're doing $1.25 million of sales a year. I mean, guess what, people? They like this product. This is a product people like and people want to buy. And, you know, we obviously the illicit market is not as much competition in New Jersey, but a competition in other places. But guess what? Americans want a safe, tested product in a nice package marketed by your last guests. And there's, you know, everyone is loyal to, you know, Johnny, their drug dealer. But, you know, we're building a consumer product here. And I think from New Jersey, like, it's happening. And so, you know, we're really fortunate to have a great store in Rochelle Park. We're opening Friday in Montclair. We're opening sometime this fall in Fort Lee. You know, it's really exciting for the Garden State.
You mentioned that transactions increased 23x, but revenue 17x. I'm curious as to what do you think drove that difference, that discrepancy? Is it that, like,
oh, the differential?
Purchases, so, are there, like, smaller baskets for adult use, or?
Yeah. So yes. So in general, I don't know what it is in New Jersey, but in general, medical baskets are about 30% higher. Across the country. I mean, it makes sense. You know, the medical consumer is probably the heaviest user of cannabis, and so those baskets are always about 30% higher. You get the kind of curious coming into the dispensary. You know, they might only buy a few pre-rolls or an edibles or something, and that's great. You know, we want that customer too. The medical customer is coming for their medicine, you know, often, you know, two times a month, and you know, and they're buying usually closer to their limits. So you know, we serve everybody. If you're over 21, come to Ascend off Route 17. We have product for you.
Can I ask something? I'm looking at your release right now. It says 22 operating dispensaries. Is that total?
Yeah, it's total. We're small, but we are mighty.
That's insanity compared to the rest of the industry.
Yeah, well, we average $14.6 million per dispensary. We have two dispensaries over $50 million in sales. You know, we go for big hits here. And that's because we're going into limited license markets at the turn of adult use. And they're doing big numbers. I think that's one of the reasons we were successful in New Jersey. We know how to get, you know, up to 2,000 people through a store a day. And you know, forget about cannabis. Not that many people in the world, you know, get 2,000 people through a store a day. And, you know, not many stores in the world do over 1.25 million. I think we haven't done this in a while, but we ran it up. It was like Tiffany's in Fifth Avenue. There were the Apple stores. Like it's a very small number, right? And, you know, we've done that in Illinois for a while, and we do that. And so when you come to Rochelle Park, you know, you can leave your car and get back in your car in 10 to 12 minutes. And that's every day, all day long. And if you order ahead, your package will be waiting for you. And someone who's very knowledgeable and very nice will answer any questions you have. And then you get back in your car and go home. I mean, you know, people like, you know, the newspapers, you know, the first day of adult use, the drone shots of long lines, and that's great. Guess what? Americans don't want lines. They want to get in, they want to get out and back to their lives. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to do at Ascend. And so, yeah, we average $14.6 million a store, two stores over $50 million. You know, we're generating our sales compactly. And to be honest, like, if you look at the most successful players in the business, things like what Kim's done in Florida and others, you know, you need to be deep in a state. You need to have market share and generate a lot of sales. You know, having a bunch of flags around, you know, and saying I'm in 27 states and I'm losing money in 17 of them, like that's not going to get the job done. And I think, you know, being deep in the states is how we've been successful so far. And that's what we want to continue to do.
You know, I have two questions related to states. One is a pretty brief one from the chat, live chat here, Akim or Akjim asking, are you coming to Alaska?
Okay. I would like to visit Alaska first. I've never been to Alaska, but it looks really beautiful, and I bet there are a lot of customers there. And mm-hmm. if it's a limited license state, you know, we'll check it out. Yeah. I can say that, I mean, you know, we're looking at going into Maryland. You know, we've tended to stay in states that are 6 million people and above. And there's a reason for this. Like, you know, because of the federal, you know, the state-by-state nature, I've got to build a grow facility that costs $25 million at least in whatever state I go into. So, unfortunately, that makes it harder to go into the smaller states because it's the same amount of money and I have less customers. So, you know, there can be good states that are smaller and some people are making good money. But for us to get scale, you know, we focus on the larger states and we focus east of the Mississippi. And, you know, we're going to be focused. And, you know, we're in a tough capital markets, we're in a tough industry situation, and we're here for the long term, and we're focused on execution.
And the other state I wanted to ask about is Ohio. What's going on with Ohio? Because I know Jersey is an important market for you. I know Michigan is an important market for you. A lot of people are talking about them. Not so much Ohio. You recently acquired Ohio Patient Access, or OPA. Very, very Greek. Whoopa! So don't break any plates. But for real, what's going on in Ohio? Why do you like the Ohio market?
Well, you're not from there because you would say Ohio. That's not, you know, that's
not I'm from Argentina, that's not the, so I'll probably mispronounce everything. Yeah. Just well, give me a pass.
You know, the Buckeyes take it very seriously, and my daughter goes to Michigan and Ann Arbor, and I can't say that anywhere near our Ohio stores. But the we think Ohio is one of the best markets. People are sleeping on it. 10 million people, 58 dispensaries, 24 grow licenses, of which all have very strict canopy caps. They're adding more stores, basically doubling the number. Very similar regime to Illinois, which has been very successful and very great for the MSOs. There's a cap of 5 stores. These 3 stores, get us to the cap of 5. It's not on the agenda for adult use this year, so maybe it hasn't gotten as much press. We expect it to be on the ballot in 23. Ohio is a purple trending red state these days. And the Republicans didn't really want it on the ballot for 22 because there's a governor or senator race. And they certainly don't want it in a 24 because of the presidential race. Because remember that, you know, when this is on the ballot, Democrats historically show up more to vote because ballot questions get people to vote. And and even though this polls 70% nationwide, you know, it polls better blue than red. You know, which I don't know why, because if I believed in, you know, stealing the elections, I probably should smoke some product. we think it's going to be great. We think it's going to be great in 23 and sets up really well. And I think, you know, if you look at the OPA transaction, one of the stores there is basically a mile from the Kentucky border. You know, Kentucky has no program, you know, whatsoever, really. It's not likely to go recreational anytime soon. It's in the out parcel of a casino, which one of the top grossing casinos in Ohio with 250 spots. And it's right down the road from Cincinnati and the stadiums where the Bengals and Reds play. So, we think this has the capability of being a $50 million store, but a $25+ million store. So we're going big game hunting for, you know, those types of stores. And because remember, if there's a cap of 5, you know, I can't go out and get 10 stores to get $50 million of sales, you know? So, yeah. You know, there's a real, so our ability to source real estate and pick locations becomes really valuable when you have caps. And, a lot of people rushed to get store count, and early stores were forced to take like industrial type locations. We like to come in traditional retail locations at around the time of the flip to adult use and go for traditional, you know, retail locations with a lot of parking and car counts and all that good stuff and execute.
Well, as a Kentuckian, I can tell you, you're not far off in saying that they have no program whatsoever. But also,
I got to tell you, Ohio they have a great medical program. People embrace it. It pulls well. You know, it's going to be a very successful adult use program, as Illinois has been, as Michigan has been. So, you know, we just got to get through the politics and get it open.
I want to end with one very specific question. I know we're tight on time, so try and be respectful of that here. But New Jersey, I think, state Senate leader recently, I think, announced a bill that would allow the governor to agree with other governors for interstate commerce. A, is that possible, you think? Or, and B, does that excite you, or is that something that wouldn't excite you?
Well, look, every now and then people like to talk about interstate commerce, and we all know eventually, like sooner or later, something's got to happen. But, you know, we can't even get bank accounts. You know, I got employees who can't get mortgages, you know, so like people want to skip all the way ahead to, you know, making it in California and shipping it, you know, across the country. So we have a long way to go from federal legalization point of view. The Controlled Substances Act bans federal, you know, use of the product, which includes any transfer across state lines. That's why we have to, you know, do it this way. I think that when, assuming we get some kind of states' rights, state plus banking bill, it opens the possibility of state-by-state trading of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, it can be political for senators and governors, but it has all sorts of practical problems, which is yes. The testing, dosage, all your product portfolio, which is why, like, let's say this was, you know, made federally legal, you know, you'd have to go to the FDA and they'd be like, okay, well, you know, you can have 5 milligram gummies in Ohio, 10 milligram gummies in thing. You're not allowed to have pictures of the Cookie Monster for cookies in this state. You can't have blue packaging in that state. You know, all of that has to be worked out, and that would have to be worked out across a state lines. The other issue is, particularly when you're state by state, is there's a lot of jobs. You know, there's a lot of jobs. You know, we're going to employ, you know, 500 people in our facility in Franklin, New Jersey. You know, if the governor allows interstate commerce and we can bring in product from Oregon, which we'll do, I mean, you know, we got to put those 500 people out of a job, you know, and maybe not all of them, but some of them. And so, you know, that's, you know, sometimes that's life, that's business if the government wants to go that way, but it's tough on New Jersey, you know? And so, you know, it remains to be seen if that's really the best thing for these programs. I mean, I think, you know, if you were to say to me, like, will my children benefit from interstate commerce in cannabis? I would say yes, but you know, will I? Unfortunately, like, you know, I don't think I got that kind of years on me, but it's possible. And we'll, and remember, you know, the MSOs, we have distribution. We have, you know, we have grows, we have brands, we have stores. Like if they say they can ship it from our Oregon, we'll pick it up in New Jersey and we'll put it on our shelves. But you know, there's been a lot of effort from all these states to put in state programs. We brought capital into the states, jobs into the states. And I think the states are going to fight really hard before they let that in. I think where it potentially makes sense is in a place like Kentucky or a place like Utah. Let's say a state doesn't want to have a bunch of grows in their facility. Well, why does Utah can say, look, I'll just take the product from Oregon, Washington, and California, and I'll regulate the stores. I don't need grows in my state. I mean, that, you know, for late entry states, I think that could make sense. But for states that built the infrastructure, you know, I see why the governor of Oregon wants it. I'm not sure why the government of New Jersey wants it. I think one thing that they're talking about is, sorry, this is a long answer.
No, it's a great answer.
Really good.
You know, one thing that was talked in the Northeast is, you know, New Jersey, Connecticut, and New York, you know, maybe somebody else would get in and have, you know, centralized rules. That was, you know, talked about, I think, you know, at the beginning of legalization. And that would be great. Another, you know, when did New Jersey, Connecticut, and, you know, New York agree on anything, right? So, you know, so it's easy to say, but, you know, they don't agree on anything. And when does any politician want, like, anything that's not their idea? Also, I mean, New York has gone way off the reservation here. I mean, they're supporting illicit shops. They're giving licenses to 10,000 people. They're not working with the, you know, with the existing operators, and that's fine. It's their state; they can do what they want. But they're really creating both legal, creates all sorts of problem market, violence, like regulation. They've got unsafe, untested product. They're not going to get the tax revenue. They're not going to get good product on their shelves. This is a case of the government doing everything they can to destroy an industry before it starts. And LA did a good job. So they want to copy the LA model. They're doing that, and they'll end up with another LA in downtown New York City. And that's fine. Like, I mean, you know, people in a lot of countries deal with gray market stuff, and you buy stuff in bodega. I mean, you know, if that's what New York wants, like, it's New York's choice. Mm-hmm.
Abner, really fantastic answers. We have kept you over time. Thank you.
Sorry, that was a political.
No, honestly, we appreciate your answers. Yeah. The transparency.
I'm glad we did.
Yeah, thank you. It's fantastic. So, Abner, thank you for letting us keep you over time, my friend. We'll get you back on soon.
All right, thank you, guys.
And keep us updated. Thanks. Awesome, Javi. What with those answers of the interview, man? Wow.
I really enjoyed the show, dude.
Me too.
I'm in a good mood. I'm just in a learning mood. What it is, but
yeah, they were both fantastic, honestly. Madison, I would love to get him back on to talk more about opportunities that come up in the marketing space. But Abner, I'm so happy we get to keep in touch with him on these conversations. That said, we got to free up our producer Aaron Thomas to go interview Calvin Johnson tonight. We'll get you that video soon. AT and Jamie gonna be present in upstate Michigan.
The Megatron.
That's gonna be exciting. So with that being said, y'all, thank you so much for tuning into Cannabis Insider today. Always listen to us on Apple. And what's the other one?
Spotify.
Thank you. It's not StreamYard. Spotify, Apple, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. That being said, we'll see you again Thursday. Javi, any last words, brother?
Sure. BZCannabis.com. Join us in Chicago, September 13 and 14 for the best cannabis, finance, investing, and business conference in the entire world.
And the best. That's what I'm talking about. Hands down, all the major ones will be there. We'll see you there. Later.